What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel, where we get to talk about oft-overlooked characters. And today, we're finally tackling a character that I've been talking Trung Lee and Yuan about for, I think, 2 years now. So we finally get to talk about the incredible character Susan Hatchie, who is the evil sister of Karma. We are also joined by the incredible Alyssa Wong. Before I jump into the Karma situation, I want to focus on the two of you and your adorable friendship. Let me have Trung and Alyssa introduce yourselves with your pronouns, and I'd love to hear the story of how you two met and became friends. You're both delightful, and I imagine even more delightful together. Let me welcome Trung to the show first. Hi, Trung.
Hi, thank you so much. No pressure. Now I feel like if Alyssa and I are like really awkward on the phone together and like self-conscious, I'm going to be like, oh no. Hi, I'm Trung Lee Nguyen. I'm an author and a cartoonist and an artist. I do comics. I think my best known work is probably my debut graphic novel, The Magic Fish. And I've done some like IP work here and there. I've done a little bit of Marvel work in reworking the character Karma very gently after the work that was already put in by Vita Ayala. So yeah, that's my connection to Marvel stuff. I forget what else do I have to... Oh yes, my pronouns are he, him, and they, them. I think we met on the internet. We were introduced through some mutual friends. We nerded out together online for a while. And then we took that friendship kind of like offline and started having phone calls with each other on a semi-regular basis. It started off as like, let's talk about craft. And then it slowly became like, oh, we have a lot in common. Let's do complaints.
Let me also welcome Alyssa back to the show. Hi, Alyssa. How great to see you.
Oh, thank you. Hi. Yeah, I'm Alyssa Wong. My pronouns are they, them. I write short fiction. I write comics. And I am a recovering game developer. Yeah. I'm trying really hard not to get sucked back into the game, but you know how it is. I write comics for Star Wars, Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, IDW, a couple things. You might know me in the X-Men world from writing Psylocke most recently.
And Deadpool. Mm-hmm. We're recording this in late August, literally just 2 days after the last issue of Psylocke was released. Just a beautiful job, my friend. I was just at a couple of X-Men shows. We were talking about the current lineups and universally beloved things were said about the Psylocke book across the board. So I'm really going to miss it very much. It was just a great, great, great book.
Thank you. Oh, it makes me so happy. Oh my God.
Alyssa, remind me who the artist was for that, because the art was so beautiful too.
Oh my God. Vincenzo Caratu is incredible.
So pretty. So good.
Stunning. Absolutely gorgeous. No, that art is beautiful. That art makes the book. And it's always so nice to work with an artist where you both get excited about each other's work. Every script is like, I want to do better for Vincenzo. And I think he was also like, I got to level my art up every single time. And that was really fun. And yeah, Trung and I, we met online. We've been bros for a long time now, actually, thinking about it. Just
kind of
crazy.
Yeah, better part of a decade now, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my goodness.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, I just remember our calls started as like, what if we just set aside a chunk of our calendar to just work and we can work together and make sure that work gets done. And now, I don't know if work gets done. It sort of does, but never the work I think it's going to be, if that makes sense.
It started off very technical where it was like, well, we need like to, our ADHD brains need a co-working buddy. And so we can sort of keep each other on task. And then it evolved into, we have a lot of like kind of theoretical ideas about what the nature of storytelling and art and how we can use the tools that we have to like impact things. So it went from being very like kind of granular to being like, these are our broader like romantic ideals about making art, which has been very cool.
You are both delightful. This is a real life friendship that definitely should be. So I'm very happy to know you both. And it was really fun for me to learn the two of you are both friends as well. Now, Trung and I have talked pretty extensively about Karma because not only did Trung do some work on karma, which we talked about in your first interview on my show, but you came back to do the general episode, the general Koimon episode, where we got to talk all about karma's
Yes.
evil uncle. And that's kind of where we were like, oh, we're going to cut this off at the conversation around Susan Hatchie, and we definitely should have that conversation sometime. So
I just love Karma. I think I encountered her for the first time in New Mutants, Vita Ayala's run. I would say I'm pretty new to the world of X-Men. The comic sense, I grew up watching X-Men Evolution. Like, I don't think Karma was in that. But I don't know. I was like, this girl's great. I love her. She deserves better. So that's my and then when Trung was like, I'm doing a Karma comic, I was like, send me everything. Send me everything right now. And it was so delightful. I did not know about Susan Hatchie. I should not be surprised by this point that there's an about any X-Men having like an evil sibling or twin or relative. Like I shouldn't be surprised, but I read about her for the first time doing this research, and I have so many thoughts. And also, justice for Susan Hatchie is what I would say.
We did
Maybe
like a
some.
little debrief after we both read the issue, and we were like, okay, we're gonna iron out some thoughts. We're gonna hash it out a little on the
We
podcast.
support women's wrongs on this show for sure. Now, Trung, I know you did a deep dive into the karma world when you were doing your story. Was this new information for you as well to jump into this kind of perspective from Susan's side?
Yeah, I mean, I think my relationship to Susan Hatchie, the character, it was very much that like I did some research into Karma's backstory and her history and the way that she was written, and I was pretty narrow in my research on Karma too. I was like, well, what is relevant to the story that I'm writing like right in front of me right now? What is her relationship to the characters that will show up on the page? And so I looked into her relationship with her brother, but not really any of her other relatives. And so I was like vaguely aware that she had other relatives floating around, and I like recognized the name Susan Hatchie, but I remember being like, did they interact in any significant way very recently? And I realized it was like, oh, it was like over a decade ago since we've last seen Susan Hatchie, and I'm pretty sure she's dead, so I'm just not going to worry about that at all.
Now,
So
this
this
is
was the first time I've encountered Susan Hatchie like on the page, was reading the comic for this.
we're going to be t discussing one specific run of comics, which is Marjorie Liu, and there's variable artists, but Mike Perkins is there for a lot of it. The 2012 run of Astonishing X-Men, which was kind of in the middle of this run. This is the book that started out as Joss Whedon's. Marjorie Liu has a pretty epic run that really is beloved to a lot of readers because it's so deeply entrenched in character motivation. This run on comics is very famous because this is where Northstar and Kyle get married. This is where Iceman gets the Celestial Death Seed and rounds up all of his ex-girlfriends and just doesn't quite come out on the page, but it's very apparent that he's queer. There's a lot of really amazing character work done in this. Do either of you know Marjorie?
No, don't know her personally. I am aware of her work professionally,
She's
and it's very
amazing.
well regarded.
I don't think so. I might have met her very briefly in passing when I was like 23, but it's been a hot minute since then. And yeah, no, I was like, oh, Marjorie Liu. But no, I do not know her, but like Trung, I am familiar with her work.
So I'm going to review very briefly the early origins of Karma, which we have gone into in other spots on the show before, which is funny because we haven't even got to this character in the chronology on my show yet, but we keep doing these character episodes where we talk a lot about her. There are not a lot of Vietnamese queer empathic characters out there. We love her for a lot of reasons, but now in more recent years, she's also a character who is disabled, as she's an amputee with a prosthetic, a character that is very beloved. And Trung really just made her sing so beautifully in that Love Unlimited arc that we've had the opportunity to talk about multiple times on the show. It's just delicious. Karma was created by Chris Claremont in an issue of Marvel Team-Up number 100 back in around 1980. They initially introduced her as Shan Khoi Mon. Trung has updated that name to Xuan Kaomon, which is a much more accurate version of the name. We won't delve deep into that, but because of that last name change, that means all of the family members' last names have changed as well. We learn in her initial appearance that she's the daughter of a colonel in the Vietnamese army. She has a twin brother named Tran. Both of them are mutants, and their powers activated when a soldier attacked them. Karma ended up taking taking mental possession of the soldier and making him stop, but then Tran, her brother, took mental possession of the soldier and made the soldier kill himself. So the name Karma very represents early on the idea of good and evil. Swan is the good side and Tran is the bad side, is kind of the way that it is told. Now, she has an evil uncle who has a lot of international business interests. He's very much a kingpin type character. He was profiting off the Vietnamese war. And there's the story of Vietnamese boat people, which reflect directly to Trung's origins, which again, we got to talk about in our first interview. Oh, well, in both interviews, we talked about that actually. So Karma and her brother and her two younger siblings and her parents were all put on a boat. The story initially presented is that they were attacked on the boat. Her mother was sexually assaulted and killed. Her father was killed. Karma and her brother Tran, as well as the two little kids, Liang and Naga, made it into the States. And then there's a whole bunch of her origins about her brother going evil. And then she basically like absorbed his soul into her own body, which is the story that Vita and Trung kind of sorted out in more recent days. Tron is alive and well in his own body now. Now, Liang and Naga have had their own weird histories. There was a time when Spiral kidnapped them and turned them into like adult mutant weird things. You can go look that story up as well. But where we pick up this story more specifically is we learn that there's a lot more to Karma's father's origins than initially we understood. This is where Marjorie Liu ties it into the original. He had a secret family, he had another daughter, he's not a great person, and he survived the war. So we're gonna jump into the specifics of the Susan Hatchie story. Her real name is Dao Kamon, if I'm saying that correctly. And she is the secret sister of Karma. So that's a very brief recap. Trung, did I get it all accurate? And what are your thoughts on the idea that Karma's dad survived the war?
I mean, it's juicy. All the X-Men comics are soap operas, and so I love that this like kind of spicy surprise twist is a thing that readers get to enjoy. It's not really, yeah, no, I think it makes sense within the realm of comics. I think it's fun. It was not something that like I don't know, like it's difficult for me to be like, well, this seems unnecessary because nothing in comics is necessary as long as it's fun, right?
Karma stories, if you're having a karma-specific story, and there's not a ton of them out there, they're a lot about control. They're a lot about good versus evil. They're all about the limitations of power. If I can control others, can I control myself, right? But when we lean into her family crazy, it's really fun and, like you said, very juicy.
One, I think my first thought was that's wild. And two, I agree with Trung. I think there's such a core of X-Men stories, and that core is soap opera and feelings, and I love that. Yeah, I remember talking about Karma and her origins way back when Trung was doing some reading. I think that's how I ended up getting to dive really, really deep into like Karma's whole deal. It really is giving soap opera. It's giving all kinds of soap opera. Like Chinese soap opera. Oh my God.
Yeah, no, it was very C drama, like so much of it is. I mean, like I remember explaining the first time we meet Karma, and I'm like, well, Spider-Man was in it, and they were at a fancy party that the Fantastic Four were at, and then there was a fight, and then there was like control happening, and then there was Psychic Vore, and I think that was where we landed.
Yeah, you were like, oh, by the way, she ate her brother. I was like, she what? Excuse me. people need to talk about this more often. But yeah.
There's a lot happening in the series. It's very well crafted. It feels like one of those very self-contained, epic X-Men runs, and all the characters get really beautiful moments to shine in along the way. So we're gonna pick up in Astonishing X-Men number 49. We have kind of a random assortment of X-Men who are fighting a random group of marauders, and the character Chimera, who's that weird extra-dimensional lady dressed in leather who can create like telekinetic sock puppet dragons. She's a crazy character. I actually really like Chimera. But there's a certain point where Karma realizes these villains they're fighting are not in control of their own minds. So she frees them and the fight ends, but she's trying to find out who's behind it, and there's like psychic blockers in place. When she looks into the mines, she sees a vision of herself rotting there, and there's someone kind of watching. There's a very fit woman in red who's exercising in a fancy penthouse, and she's not sure if the mission went how she wanted it to. She says, too soon to tell, much too soon, and she's very rich. She's ordering Marcus to bring her car around and Lillian to order the new collection from Versailles. Versace for a fitting the following day. She makes a call and, through some technology, is able to take over Karma's mind. She has some nanobots that she can infect, which allow her to control mutants and their abilities, and she's doing that with her sister. So again, it's a story about karma with control. You did quite well breaking my hold over Chimera. Now let's see what I can do with you. I'm curious how you'll handle the X-Men. Alyssa, your thoughts on would Susan and Shinobi Shaw be good friends?
So it's funny, I was actually thinking about that. I think that, Shinobi's hot tub is open to everybody, and I think they'd have fun. They'd be really fun friends. They would be really fun one night hookup. But I was like, with these two, like, someone's gonna eat the other person, and not psychically. So yeah, fun until it's not, is sort of the
Susan
vibe.
would make an amazing member of the Upstarts, right? Like the like let's toy with everyone and just fuck shit up. She would have a really good time. Jumping to issue 50, the Marauders are all forced to kill each other because Hachi wants to cover her own tracks. These are all clones, like the sinister clones of the Marauders. They die all the time. Now we also have Karma through the control tech forcing the X-Men to fight each other. We get the big wedding between Northstar and Kyle, and after the wedding, Kyle is taken over and nearly forced to shoot himself and then North Star. But Karma is very quickly able to end that, and she starts realizing she is being controlled. So we have a Karma fucking with everyone because someone's fucking with her, but we don't know who the mysterious assassin is at this point. This wedding in the comics between North Star and Kyle was like hitting national newspapers. Gay marriage was just kind of starting to pass around the country. It's like 2012. Gay marriage legally passed everywhere in 2015. So this was a big deal for Marvel to take a risk. And we have multiple queer characters in this book, right? Iceman, Northstar, Karma, even though we can't quite put it on the page.
You know what? I thought, okay, so I thought the wedding was sweet, and there was a lot of, like, of course, there's going to be a lot of drama, and Wolverine getting his stomach blown out, I guess, was kind of a part of that entire process. The way that the pages were drawn sort of reminded me so much of, like, horror comics in general. And Mike Perkins is a fantastic horror comics artist, as I figured out later. I was like, okay, that's why the pages look like this. And so for a lot of the narrative process of, like, kind of absorbing the story, I felt like, oh, well, there's some sort of like visual tension between what's going on in the words and what's going on in the pictures. And so for me, I guess the technical presentation of the wedding felt like, oh, well, this feels like a very, like, it doesn't feel like an event wedding. It just feels like this is a wedding that is happening, which I kind of appreciated because it sort of felt like they're not trying to make like a huge deal of this at the time, but it kind of was. So it felt very like, oh, like this is just a thing that happens to the X-Men and to the characters around them. And I guess to Alpha Flight in general. I think I started to realize that Alpha Flight is like a very different animal than X-Men. I had no familiarity with like any of the Alpha Flight characters, and I was like, do they all always hate each other, or is it normal for them to be fighting each other this much?
Alpha Flight is a group of mentally ill trauma carriers who have been conscripted by the government to manipulated into government service to act as national heroes. They're a crazy team. My friend Daryl just released an Alpha Flight book, so I've been on multiple panels with him this year talking about all the Alpha Flight juiciness. But this issue is really fun. The wedding buildup, there's a lot of moments where like North Star's just oblivious. Kyle's like, I'm not sure this relationship is working. And North Star's like, well, let's get married then. And he's like, no, that's not the way we're gonna do this. It's really fun. And of course, there's crazy, superhero battles. This is a big cast of characters too. If you don't know the X-Men, you're jumping into a book that has like 30 characters running around. And, they're all well characterized, but it's a lot. Jumping to 52, Karma is wounded and confused and thinking about her tragic history, the losses of her brother and her leg and her parents. And she has this effort to try to make a normal life for her siblings. She signed up to raise these two kids that she didn't really ask for. Of course, she loves them, but family legacy, she's the person who has to take over. She's discovered by armed men and a woman in a red dress. Karma says, you. And Susan says, yes, me, clumsy old me, the woman with her finger on your soul. It's cute that you try to fight me, it really is. But the nanotech I infected you with truth makes you mine, entirely mine. Karma can't move. She says, why me? And Susan says, because whether you realize it or not, you're the most powerful of the X-Men. And I like power. I like using it. I like owning it. Karma says, no, it's more than that. When you look at me, Susan says, well, yes, that's true. I'm surprised you don't recognize me yet. Karma says, I remember now. I'm going to kill you for good. And Karma's able to break the control and leap forward. She grabs Susan by the neck, but then the nanites kick in, the control is restored. Karma is kidnapped, and the soldiers fire massive weaponry at Wolverine. A bomb gets put in his abdomen and set to explode after the wedding. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. So we get this confrontation between the two sisters for the first time, and we start to get an idea of who Susan is without quite stating it on the page.
Yeah, sorry, one second. I dropped my phone.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah, no, all the drama. Ah, and my dog is trying to eat my face. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, all the drama. Such drama. I mean, actually, I know I said C drama. It's actually giving K drama now. The mysterious, sexy, rich half sister you didn't know you have showing up at a wedding to cause trouble. I mean, that's peak. I was like, girl, you are a creep. I think probably because they're half sisters, but hey, who am I to judge? I think it was. I was intrigued. I'm like, I want to know what this girl's whole deal is, other than being like, I'm hijacking your mind. Clearly, they've got some kind of past. And because I'm that person, if I had just been reading it and didn't know, I would have been like, exes? But that's just, I mean, but I knew going in that was not the case.
The interchange between them is really fun and sets up a lot. So as we jump to 53, the X-Men become aware of a company called Hatchie Tech, and there are nanites behind their recent struggle. So they seek out Susan. She has this signature red dress look very, very consistently, and she's giving a speech at her company. The speech quote, yes, but key strategies all lead to the same result. Whether your business is hairpins or guns, money is always the bottom line. It has to be. None of us can survive without it. Hatchie Tech is no different except for one key point. We don't always listen to the market because the market, my friends, is made up of people, and people don't always know what they want or deserve. So if the market doesn't respond to a project, any project that we believe strongly in, we simply evolve it until suddenly it's exactly what the market needs right now. So Iceman is here. He's twirling ice cubes around in his hand for some reason, and he's like, "Wow, she's hot." Buffy's always projecting. North Star's sipping on wine, and he's like, "She's a killer." Gambit shuffling cards, and he's like, "She's dangerous." And as she's concluding her speech, she turns to them, greets them, and is like playing on her phone at the same time. Remy LeBeau, Jean-Paul Bubé, and Bobby Drake. What a sight! My heart is all aflutter. North Star says, "Cut it out. I'm sure you know why we're here. I put a bomb in Wolverine. I took over Karma's mind and made her take possession of your new husband and the X-Men. I also killed the Marauders, or rather their most recent incarnation. Clones are so inconvenient. What, you thought I'd deny it?" They're like, "We don't even know you." She says, "This was an experiment. I needed to test some new technology. And who better to be my guinea pigs than the X-Men? If I can beat you, I can beat anyone. And it's becoming abundantly clear that I can beat you anytime I want." Gambit says, "You made this personal." She says, "Maybe. I can be petty. Did you know that I used to be a mutant? A low-level telepath? And then I lost my gift." So we're referring to M-Day here. "But that doesn't mean I lost my imagination." He says, "Do you have karma?" What a loaded question, North Star. "If I do, what then? Will you attack me here in this crowded room with all these witnesses? Will you risk the reputation of the X-Men and mutants everywhere? It's so difficult being the good minority, isn't it? So much pressure, so little room for mistakes. Congratulations on the wedding, by the way. Your husband's very handsome." So the X-Men are here, Warbird, the one from space, we'll talk about her another time, and Cecilia Reyes. They track Hatchie to an abandoned Russian military base in Georgia, the country of Georgia. The text tells us the base is big, radioactive, and being used by our bomb-happy enemy in heels, which is a great way to describe Susan. There's a giant ice monster that Iceman creates. They sneak in and find a bunch of people who've been experimented on, and they find Karma strapped to a wall with a helmet tech thing placed on her head, and then the base self-destructs with the X-Men inside. They survive. Cecilia Reyes is there. She's got force fields. Okay, there was a lot that happened in this issue. Let's unpack this for a few minutes. So, Trunk, first of all, I would love to hear your thoughts on the comparisons between Susan and the General. She is a criminal who's running a full empire, talking about profit and people.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I have a lot. I walked away from this comic having so much sympathy for Susan Hatchie because I was like, you're just like, you're kind of a try-hard girl boss, and you made the number one try-hard girl boss mistake, like, which is you shat where you ate. Like, you mixed your personal life with your professional, and things got real messy. And I deeply related to that as a character. So I was like, I'm rooting for you.
Do you think she and the general have much in common?
I actually am not super sure because the general as a character is like him being like a kingpin figure kind of grants him this sort of like this sort of aloofness. We can project a lot onto him as a character because he's both like he's a little bit of a mustache twirly villain. He's like self-interested and he's greedy and he's doing all of these things because he wants power and he wants money. And so I suppose in that way she has a lot in common with him, but her motivations are very personal and very clear and very messy. And so in that way, I think I gravitate more towards Susan as a character because there's very little room. Like she's more in control, at least within like a narrative framework. A lot more gravity is given to her personal motivations, I think. So she's a character that's a little bit more three-dimensional. You can't project onto her. And so it's her kind of intentions that are sort of leading the story, which I think is very interesting. And the general character, like while he does drive the plot in the books that he's in, he doesn't have quite the same, like his personality doesn't have quite the same little hooks that get into you the way that Susan's does.
I have found, I do a number of these conversations on villains. I found that I have a strong bias between a cishet guy who's like engaging in human trafficking, woof, woof, nope,
Right.
and like a hot woman in heels who's like experimenting on people for evil. I'm like, oh yes, I love her. Like I very much have a bias toward these like boss bitch characters, which is
Yeah, no, she's great. I love how many times she says, I'm a businesswoman. I've had a great laugh at that. I think it was like once every other issue, she's like, I am a businesswoman. And I kept hearing it in the like Barney Stinson, we are international businessmen line from How I Met Your Mother, because he repeats that a lot as a bit in an episode. And I'm like, okay, Susan Hatchie, I see you.
So, Alyssa, we learned it here, and we're going to learn more about this character's motivations in a minute. But this character has, she used to be a mutant. She's lost her powers, and now she's bored and is like, let's fully attack the X-Men for a good time. When she's casually admitting everything, yeah, I put a bomb in her, and yes, I had you pull a gun, and oh my God, these inconvenient clones that I slaughtered. Like, she's very haphazard about the whole thing. What are your thoughts about her connection with the mutant world? She has this projection of being the good minority group, right?
Oh, that's messy. That's so messy. That is messy and complicated. Well, first off, bold of her to be like, yes, I'm in this room giving a business presentation about business. Also, I'm gonna tell you about all the fucking crimes I've done in public while everyone's here. And then has the gall to be like, what, are you gonna attack me? Like, what's your deal? Which, to be fair, yeah, that would be pretty wild, but also this lady is admitting to a lot of murder.
Well,
Some wild.
we're also gonna learn in a minute though, she's already got nanites in all of these characters. So even if they attack, she just flicks a button, right? Like she's got full control here.
And that's a beautiful thing. I think, like, I mean, again, I fully support women's wrongs. I was like, fucking get them. I would be so upset someone just carved out a piece of who I was and was like, oops, my bad. To me, that's what losing your mutant powers would be. It's just an intrinsic piece of you. And then if suddenly it's gone, you're left with this intense sense of loss and confusion, not just over losing this ability to do something, but also losing a piece of your identity, which is so tied to what we would consider, I guess, which is really tied to, like, I would say our physical function. So it's really tied to disability as well.
Yeah, that kind of connects her to karma in a way too, because I mean, like using like Miles and Jay explain the X-Men do a really great job of talking about the ways in which mutant abilities are sort of this stronger corollary for disability politics. And I kind of find that Susan's status as a former mutant kind of like almost has narrative echoes to karma's like amputation as well, and they have very different relationships to ability and disability in that way.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that speech about being it's difficult being the good minority, so much pressure, so little room for mistakes. And I think we as queer people could all fully understand.
Oh, that's, I think that was a huge part of why I like really was rooting for Susan Hatchie, because like I too have gone through that, like I'm so tired of being the model minority. What if I just went completely evil? What if I like used all of my powers for selfish means? What if I used all of my powers to get revenge on everyone who's ever annoyed me? So like that fantasy, that like kind of that relationship with the way that you are perceived and the way that you carry yourself and where it is that you find markers of success as like this sort of like you have a toxic relationship with your own capacity to do fantastic things is like a very Asian American thing, I think. And so I was like, yeah, this character, I really feel her. And I don't actually know that Susan Hatchie is Asian American. Like, is she like, did she ever immigrate, or is she like a Vietnamese national, or is she like Madripoor bound? Like, I don't know where
I
she is
don't think we have an
internationally.
answer to that question.
Yeah, no, we don't.
So she's a plotter and she's using human experiments and she's operating in multiple countries, but we still don't know the connection to karma at this point, right? So it runs more deeply personal. She's got a pettiness to her that I find delicious in its way. So jumping to issue 54, the X-Men have survived the big explosion and Susan is just waiting outside. She's, well, this is adorable. The X-Men on their knees and my research facility bombed to hell. I don't know whether to celebrate or start ripping off faces. Maybe I'll start with you, Shan, pretty little girl. And Karma vomits on Susan's shoe. Cute, you're lucky I inherited some mercy from my mother. If you had done that to our uncle's boots, I think he might have shot. So it turns out these two are half sisters. We're gonna learn that in a minute. So Susan makes Karma beg for her teammates' lives. You'd do anything for them, wouldn't you? If I asked you to bark like a dog, you would bark. If I asked you to jump back down into that hole, you'd jump of your own free will. They're not even family. I own you now. I own your bodies. I might as well own your souls. And this is interesting because, again, karma takes over people's minds and directs their bodies, right? So the ethics of that, what makes her the good one and Tron the bad one or Susan the bad one, are interesting views. With a push of a button, Susan demonstrates her power and makes Northstar go blind briefly. And she says, each of you has been infected with my nanoworms. You inhaled millions of them. And by now, they're in every part of your bodies. If I wanted to paralyze you, I could. If I wanted to cut off your oxygen to your brains, all I'd have to do is push a button. I could return your sight, North Star. He says, I'll even beg, just do it. I'll save begging for dessert. I want something else instead. I want Madripoor. So she says, you're either going to go take over the entire country of Madripoor, which has its own complicated history, which is kind of, well, we'll talk about Madripoor another time. It's a complicated place. If you don't do it, I'll kill you. If that's not incentive enough, then I'll infect all of New York with this. Every man, woman, and child, I'll blow them up, and I won't lose any sleep. Trust me. A demonstration like that will make me billions in the black market. Some may even call me a hero. And again, I'm a businesswoman. I'm not ready to be called a terrorist just yet. I want you to take the island as a demonstration to the world that I have a weapon powerful enough to control the X-Men, a weapon that can bring them to their knees. What's that worth, you think? What's that worth to a government who wants to control its people? What is that worth to any organization that wants to control a government? And she's like, they're like, the other X-Men will come, but she basically says, you've got 24 hours. Don't think about betraying me. I'm watching everything from your own eyes. I'll hear every word you say. If you move more than 100 feet apart from each other, you'll explode. So she gives Northstar his sight back, and they rush to Madripoor, which is its own complicated place. Karma's really struggling with this. She's like, this doesn't make sense. She's like our father in that way. So she's learned she's the half sister. How well do you know her? Asks Gambit. I don't. We only met as children once in Vietnam. My father had two families. My mother didn't know until the other woman came looking for him. She brought her daughter along. She was called Dao. She was mean even then. She tried to stab my mother, then me, just for existing. Not sure I can blame her though. She grew up different than us. We had our father more than she did. We had his protection, and she had none at all. I never saw her again after that night. Never even thought about her. I had bigger problems. Okay, so Trung, unpack this early origin of Susan for us.
I have such complicated feelings about it, and I think that like narratively it makes sense, but like I think it's just like my bias of like, well, okay, we have another like Vietnamese origin story, and now we're exploring the world in the aftermath of the war again, and that's the only relationship that we have to media. And so like my impulse is to be a little bit like prickly about it in a sort of knee-jerk way, but I think everything narratively like kind of gels both historically and within the context of these characters' conflicts with one another, because there's nothing more relatable to like a Vietnamese person than just like having a bunch of fuck-ass uncles. Like that is a thing that happens. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, I feel this. Yeah, no, but the ways in which like I have such complicated feelings about it, because like I don't love the way that Susan Hatchie's mother is sort of she's a little bit of an afterthought. Like, she's really only there to sort of drive the plot for Susan's eventual turn to villainy, which, like, I guess, like, if you're writing the character, like, in a sort of Susan first way, all of the things around her are going to, like, contribute to whatever it is that you need her path to be. But it did, like, kind of make me a little sad that, like, the mother character is not someone who's, like, very well explored at all. And that's a very, like, and I'm not sure if this is, like, a thing that continues into sort of contemporary culture, but like Vietnamese people do have like a particular sentimentality about motherhood in a way that I don't know is super present in quite the same way in a lot of like other Asian cultures. And there's a lot of like there are a lot of mother ballads. And so I was like, this doesn't like I feel like there's something about this that doesn't
Well, I
gel with
did want to
me. And
ask you though, if we have a man during the Vietnam War who is a general in the Vietnamese army and he has a wife and four children, but he also has a mistress with a bastard child, what would be the cultural implications for the unmarried mother and her daughter?
oh, she wouldn't have any resources. Like, of course, like her life would be really, really terrible. And then I think, like, there's a bit of like, I forget exactly if this is what I was reading, but there's some like human trafficking that happens, or like Susan Hatchie was like sold off
Yeah,
or
we're gonna get
something.
there
Like,
next. Yeah, it
okay,
goes.
all right. Because I was like, oh boy, like this gets so much worse.
The moment I was like, oh, here's she's my half sister. My dad had a mistress. I was like, of course he did. Of course. No, that checks out. Like, I've seen that play out. Like, I know what this is. I was instantly like, oh, girl, I'm so sorry. Like, I am so sorry.
Well,
But also, get their asses.
speaking as another writer, I mean, you have done this kind of early origin work with Kenan in your, taking a character who comes from a particular cultural background and trying to flesh out the childhood and the story. It's a powerful work because it really informs the character. And Marjorie does it brilliantly here, just like you did it brilliantly with Psylocke.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
It's very well done in both places. Okay, let's jump to 55. We're going to talk about Madripoor in a second. In 55, we open to a flashback to Saigon before the war. I told you to stay away. The money ran out. I had nothing left to sell, nothing to eat. The soldiers were coming. If we hadn't left, you went to my wife first. This is Karma's father speaking. I hear there was blood. I thought she knew about us. Don't lie to me. I don't have time for lies. You have no idea what's happening here. What's at stake? Everything is coming down. If any of us make it out alive, it'll be a miracle. Please, I love you. And we note while young Susan Hatchie watches, her father kills her mother with a single gunshot because she dared go to her the general's wife for support. One of the aides is standing by, and Karma's father says, "Do something with the girl. Leave the body here. People die here all the time. The owners will know what to do." I had no choice. He turns to Susan. Killing your mother was a mercy. Or, well, her name is Dao at the time. Killing your mother was a mercy. She would have been tortured for information about me, you too. Susan says, I'm going to kill you as a child. Someone else is going to do that. He looks at the corpse and, regrets. I told you to stay away. So Susan is pulled into the streets outside by the aide. She's told she's being taken to someplace no one will ever find her. Powerful men want to hurt your father. They could use you to do that. I'm sorry about your mother. And Susan says, don't be. She was weak. And then she gets sold to a man for $20. That's the other part of this origin story. Trung, how are you feeling?
Well, I did not like that, but it's a comic. There's got to be trauma in there somewhere. But yeah, no, this isn't something that I like. Like, maybe Marjorie Liu has some insight into the specifics of human trafficking in the aftermath of a civil war. And like that is a thing that I know has happened, but I just like this particular story beat was something where I was like, okay, I feel like we're putting a hat on a hat. We're putting a trauma hat on a trauma hat. And I'm not sure that I loved that, but I'm also like trying to parse that out because it's very like this is something that well informs the way that the character has a relationship to control and the way that she has a relationship to the loss of her powers and the ways that she's sort of motivated to maintain and then also lord that over other people. Like, this is the relationship dynamic that she has with power over other people as well. So it like makes a lot of sense. I'm like, okay, I don't love this like as a thing, but also like, okay, this actually clicks well with the way that her character's shaped.
And Karma's really noting there was a cruelty in Dao or Susan as a child. She tried to stab my mother. Her mother dies, and she's, well, she was weak. She turns to her father, says, "I was gonna kill you." She's raised in a sweatshop after this and basically like builds herself from the ground up. At some point, apparently learns she's a telepath, which we have to assume she used to help, build her billion-dollar company. But this is kind of where we get here. But the added piece, which we're about to learn, is that Karma's dad is alive. He survived the war, and he has been living in secret in Madripoor all this time, which is why Susan has sent the X-Men there. Karma's very passing mention of, yeah, I met this girl once, but I never thought about her again. I had other things to worry about, which is fair. Karma's had a pretty crazy life, the Shadow King alone. But when we look at kind of the way this is played out, you can kind of understand why Susan hates Karma in her own way, and she's trying to find their father who's living in secret. We'll get to what happens next, but Alyssa, do you have thoughts on this juicy origin?
It's definitely juicy. Part of me was like, girl, why didn't you just ask the X-Men to find your dad? But I know that what you, then we don't get the cool reveal, the end. But at the same time, this is, I feel like Marie Kondo every time I talk to you guys, I'm always like, I love myths. But I think that there's also, this is going to sound so bad, and it's because it is. I feel like trauma, especially sexual trauma, is such a staple part of too many origin stories of Asian American women. No, it's so I was like, oh, of course. And also, Susan, that was when this whole origin story was when I was like, okay, I'm 100% team Susan. Maybe you should just kill everybody. Maybe you should burn it all down. I mean, I feel like when you show up and you meet your father's other family who you know he cares about and prioritizes over you, the amount of resentment that would build up in throughout your life as a very young person, I don't think it would be uncommon for that to become violence. So I'm kind of like, I get it. Like, I know why you would try to stab them. You've never met them, but it doesn't matter because they've lived in your head your whole life. Also, her being like, my mother was weak. I was like, no, that's a bonkers line, but I get it because again, to watch yourself and experience like growing up like that with a mother who's like, I am willing to let this happen, not just to me, but to you, to be tossed aside and be ignored and have to live in secret because I love him. Of course, she's gonna be like, well, that makes you weak. So, and also she's like, I'm gonna kill you, Dad. And you know what? I think he has it coming.
Yeah, I
So.
mean, the real villain here is the father, for sure.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Now, there's a lot going on here. So he's been hiding in Madripoor all these years. Go back and listen to Trung and I's episode on the general. The general has, the evil uncle has a lot of ties to Madripoor. You almost wonder if there's a whole bunch of like war criminals from Vietnam who fled there after the war. And you kind of have to wonder how much Karma's dad is involved with that. You know, Madripoor has the high society and the low society. There's the rich criminals profiting off the labor of the underserved there in a lot of ways, which is the high town, low town. Mentality is very much there. The general, Karma's dad, who's a murderer and a war criminal, we don't know a lot about the details, but he's been living in peace and probably profit in this place. While the X-Men were still under her control, Susan Hatchie also debuted her own team of X-Men in Madripoor to attack and destroy the city, wielding as much property damage and presumably civilian casualties as possible. Now, they're all dressed in yellow and gold. She has a guy kind of looks like Beast with a huge gun, a big massive guy and like a Wolverine cowl with four huge tech claws on each arm, a red-headed woman that looks like Jean who's on fire, a super strong guy, and another guy with a whip, and they get their asses kicked and we've never seen them again. But it's the secret Hatchie Tech group of X-Men. So Susan sends the X-Men to destroy all the transportation hubs in Madripoor, and then she blows up the building where she thinks her father is living. In issue 56, we see the wreckage here, and Susan finds Karma wounded and points a gun at her head, but this is where her father father reveals himself. He's old, he's got an oxygen tank, and he's holding a gun on Susan. So here's his two daughters. Karma has a realization, and there's a bunch of soldiers with guns, and the three of them talk to each other. Karma says, "Damn it, this was all about him, wasn't it?" Susan says, "Not exactly. I wanted to test my weapons. That was never a lie. But then I thought, why not? Why not see what happens? I've been looking for him for years. I never believed he was dead, not for a minute, but I couldn't find him, not with all my money and all my contacts. So I used his one weakness, you, as bait, just to see if he would come for you. And he did." And the father says, You think I didn't know you wanted to find me? All this time I knew that Susan Hatchie, weapons dealer, was Dao Quaiman, my daughter who I abandoned. And I'm sorry for that." She says, "Sorry? I hated you for never claiming me and my mother as your family, for not protecting us like you protected them. We weren't real to you. We were mistakes. And you cleaned up that mistake with a bullet in my mother's head. Is that what you're going to do to me?" He says, "I don't want to. You should never have come looking for me. That was your mother's mistake, too. I did protect her. I protected her, you too. I was being hunted. Too much about my brother and his criminal enterprises, about things going on in the government, the war. Those men would have found you and your mother. Die quick or slow with torture. What would you have preferred?" And she's basically says, "It doesn't matter now. I'm just gonna kill you. It'll be justice for her, for me." Karma says, "You've made up your mind, but everyone else, all those people you threatened to kill, let them go." But we've forgotten that she experimented on a bunch of people too and blew them up. So she says, "You made this personal, but don't bring innocent people in." "Why not, Shan? I'm still a businesswoman." That's her favorite title. Her business card just says Susan Hatchie, businesswoman. That's the whole thing. She takes a call in the middle of all this. The nanoworms have been released into the populace. In 5 minutes, every single person in New York City will be dead. And I think she means it. I think she's genuinely going to push that button. She says, "But you can stop it if you put a gun in your mouth and pull the trigger. It'll save all of those lives. Or you can kill our father." So there's a moment where she's trying to force a decision, but the X-Men have not actually been in her control. They've been pretending to be very dysfunctional to keep her distracted. And Bobby has gone back to figure out a way to shut off the nanoworms. This lineup of images from both of their lives with all of the horribleness. Both of these women have suffered. Both of them have done what they had to do to survive. Karma says, "Both of us were abandoned, abused. We were so alone. I want you to feel what we had to do in order to survive. We're not alone. You're not alone." And she basically gives her the opportunity to make amends. And there's a moment where you think Susan is going to do it, but the father fires the gun.
I love me an evil monologue where you learn about everything, but also just shoot him. Like I think her mistake, and I can't believe I'm being like, and here's your villainous mistake, and here's how you should have done your murder better. But I feel like her mistake was not just was her mistake was the New York thing, you know? She should have just shot her dad. Which please, I mean, God, out of context, that sounds terrible. But you know what? She should have just shot her dad because, like, I think was you said Karma said you made it personal. This whole thing has been personal from the start. Every single piece of this has been about her dad, Karma, and who she holds responsible for that. To me, it's very clear. Problem is, I think I'm like, I know you're a businesswoman. Your scope got a little big. You overscoped. This is, I have a complicated feeling about the ending of Susan's story. It makes me very sad, and it also makes me furious.
Yeah,
Because honestly,
all that effort pulled to like put to get him to come out of the shadows, and then he just shoots her like he did her mom. I don't love that ending, but I kind of secretly hope that she just made them believe she was shot and it was just the nanites. Like, I want her to still be out
justice, justice for Susan Hatchie.
there.
Well, when Alyssa and I read the comic, the part where Susan Hatchie fires a rocket launcher at the building, I think we both cheered. We're like, okay, I think this is where the character has won us over. But like, I don't know, Susan Hatchie is such a tragic character because like, if you imagine the shape of her life, she's like born like the bastard child of this terrible man, and then he kills her mother and sells her to a sweatshop, and then she works her way up using maybe her powers to become like this powerful businesswoman. The shape of her life is that like she had a lot of childhood trauma, and then she did a lot of like forced manual labor, and then she probably sat through like a lot of shareholder meetings, and then she ultimately got shot by her father. Like that, and just before she dies, she gets to relive all of her trauma and her sister's trauma at the same time, and that's the moment that she dies. Like, this is horrible for this character. I'm like, I do want more for you, but I think that the way that this character has sort of like like her particular path is so like you get why she's a villain. You're like, oh yeah, like I do want you to kill everybody. Like I do want you to give all of the X-Men worms, and I want you to like control everybody's minds. And the whole like mind control nesting doll thing, I'm like, okay, that seems like a lot. That seems very, very extra. You're doing this with some flourish. But I'm just like, yeah, no, you definitely should destroy everything.
There's a lot about this character that's kind of in between the lines, I think. One of the things I think that's really interesting is when her mom was shot, it's interesting for me to think that's the moment when her powers activated. Like that moment, because so many mutant powers activate in moments of trauma. So the world's already at war. She learns about her dad's secret family while she's living in poverty, and then her powers activate, but she's helpless, right? She's tossed out into the sweatshops. So there's this long history of her building this company. She's watching Karma the whole time. She knows there's other siblings and she resents her and she's choosing particular paths. I like the idea that she's out there. There's a lot of potential I want to talk about, but she's dead at the end of this story. Karma's father gets arrested and Karma is really mad at him, of course. She says, why did you do this? She was your daughter. She was a threat. And what am I don't know what you are, Shan. After all these years, I'm barely your father. Then I'm barely your daughter, so maybe it won't hurt if I pull this trigger. She has the gun. You were always a gentle child, the most gentle of them all. Life changes us, but you not so much, I think. Your mother, is she still alive? Karma says, the boat you put us on, it was boarded by pirates. She didn't make it. And he gets arrested. He's still out there, by the way. And as he's pulled away, he says, pretend I'm dead if you can. I'm old. I will be soon enough. Now, the denouement of this is one of the few major Karma stories that's out there, first of all. Karma's usually a bit player, but Karma inherits Susan's company. She gets the billions of dollars. And it's only referenced a few times in a couple of comics. I think we see it in the New Mutants Dead Souls series as a major plot point. And then in Astonishing X-Men Volume 4, I think she just kind of uses all the money for good. And then we've never seen it really referenced again. So this billion-dollar company. But as she's reflecting on her father, Karma gives us the final thoughts. As far as I'm concerned, he's dead all over again. It was hard enough losing him the first time, partially because I also blamed him for my mother's death. He was the one who put us on that boat, you know. He paid for our escape from Vietnam. Later, I told myself that I was selfish, that I was a bad daughter for having those thoughts. I tortured myself for years. Now I don't know what to think. Susan did terrible things, but we shared that same resentment. She let it twist her. I didn't. But that's a thin line. I'm not going to waste time hating him, that's for sure. But I'm not going to visit him either. And she does not tell her siblings about her dad being alive. We don't know how Tron feels about all this, by the way. He wasn't around at the time. So the very thin line between Karma and Susan, let me hear your thoughts, Alyssa, on what separates them out as characters. What makes one good and one evil?
I'm out here like, that's a good question. And what is, I was like, what is evil? I'm like, I think threatening to blow up every person in New York and blowing up a couple buildings with a bunch of people in it, that's evil. But
And experimentation, not great.
an experimentation, I mean, yeah. It's interesting that Karma said she allowed it to twist her and I didn't. And I'm like, I wonder about that
I do
because.
too, yeah.
Right? It feels, I read that. I'm like, this feels really bad to me. And trying to figure out why, I've been thinking about this for a few days, but I just don't think it's that easy to be like, well, we had the same trauma, but like it made me good and it made her bad. I'm like, that feels bad to me because they had similar trauma, but it also wasn't the same how trauma affects you, including in families like that are all like in close contact. It affects everyone differently. And the way that you act in your life going forward, that's you can't really I feel like I'm saying a lot of words without saying them.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you apply this to Karma's story because there's a long part of Karma's history where she chose to work for her evil uncle while looking for her missing siblings. She did a lot of bad things for the general during a period of time, and there's like some Wolverine stories built around that. But one of the key differences here is that Susan sees Karma as having family while she has none. Susan knows about Karma. Karma doesn't know about Susan. And the other piece is Karma kept her powers and Susan lost hers, which seems to be the point that kind of drives this character a little bit insane. Like, I lost my powers. Now I need to build a tech company that allows me to emulate those powers so I can finally do the revenge that I never got around to do. They fucking took my mutant gene away. Like, how dare they?
Yeah, girl, building a tech company was never the answer. We all know this. A tech startup is not the answer to inner peace.
Oh my God. Well, it was 2012. It seemed like the answer to everything, and now we know.
Now we know.
So much too about the character. I mean, like, just narratively, there is a lot of tension between the two characters, that the line between them is that one chose good and one chose evil, and that it's a matter of choice. When everything about what the characters say in the book suggests that there's something inherent about them being good or evil, that she was always, that Susan was always mean when she was like little, and she tried to like stab Karma, and
At
always a
least that's
gentle
Karma's
child.
view. From Karma's view, that's how it looked, right? I don't think that's
Yeah, but
Karma's
then,
view
I
of the
mean, that's sort of
situation.
repeated with the Colonel too, because he suggests that Karma was always the gentle child as
Sure.
well. And so I think like there is something to be said about these characters are maybe like expressing a misapprehension about their views of each other. I think that's a totally valid thing. But I think like as the reader, there is that you do take these characters seriously. You kind of like have to take them at their word to a certain extent. And so it becomes this sort of like, well, what are the choices that these characters made in order to make them good or evil? And is it just a matter of vibes that Karma generally wants to help people? And what is it about her experience that like makes her inclined to do that, whereas Susan is completely warped by all of her trauma? And to what extent is that either of their like is it neither of them really get to control that arc either. So it's sort of like this, it feels very weird to walk away from this comic.
Karma feels
What I
like a
was thinking
character,
too.
Karma feels like a character that's often forced to make choices, where Susan is a character determined to make choices. I think that's one of the keys there. Karma's always
That's a
been
good
kind of burdened.
delineation.
Karma's always been by burdened by responsibility, where Susan's always been determined to climb out of it, right? Like, I'm the person who's going to work my way through this by doing. And there's a lot of stories about this character that could fit into X-Men history, but I want to focus on what her potential is.
Again, it becomes a question of agency, right? I think for both of these women, yes, they both had to make decisions, and they both had to make a lot of decisions, whether it was powered by their sense of responsibility or their determination to get out. But then again, I don't know. I feel like the moment I would love to see Karma like consider is like that could have been me. Like it could just as easily have been me. Like I said, they both have this powerlessness while also, at least in Susan's case, very briefly and permanently, in Karma's case, having the ability to seize control of other people. And there's something really interesting in that to me. And in that sense, I'm like, I'm gonna blame you, Susan, for blowing up a whole bunch of people, but I'm not gonna blame you for trying to claw your way out and why you feel so bitter about all this.
So stories that we could see very easily. There's a whole Karma epic waiting to be told because her dad is still out there. We don't know a lot about her mother or Susan's mother, which I think is a lot. The general is also still out there, but you know, Susan is resurrected on Krakoa, has her powers back, chooses to remove herself. We don't know how her powers work necessarily. We just know telepath, but Karma and Tran have the same powers. Tran is also a very playable character, and Liang and Naga are both. It's Na, excuse me. Liang and Na are both. Both mutants, but we don't know what their powers are, except for that one time Spiral powered them up. So I love the idea of Susan with the Hellfire Club or as an upstart, or even trying to come in and do, okay, let's do the family thing now. I'm gonna work with my uncle, let's recruit the step siblings or the half siblings that I have, and let's make some crazy chaos happen to the world. I think there's a huge story with this character that's waiting to be told, and I think really fleshing out the origins of Karma and the crazy family that we don't see played up on very much is a really strong way to make that shine.
Like I think as a storyteller, especially if it's like a big group project, I don't want to like undo. Like I'm more comfortable like ironing things out and fleshing things out. But like I feel like it would be very bold to bring Susan Hatchie back. I would love it if it happened, but like I can't think of a way that would. I mean, like I'm sure there's smarter writers than me can come up with a way to bring Susan Hatchie back. I don't know that I trust the narrative to like continue to explore Susan Hatchie based on everything that we've seen about her so far. But I would love for her to come back. Like I feel like her like having. I know that like Karma has inherited the company now, and I want to see more of that relationship to the other kind of like Marvel tech giants. Like I want to see what that looks like in relationship to like Stark Industries. Like I want to see what that looks like in terms of like God, what is the corporate team that used to run around in Krakoa that Monet Sankoy was part of?
Oh,
I
the
can't
X-Corp.
remember.
The
Thank you.
X-Corp. Yeah.
Yes, X-Corps. Yeah, of course, obviously. Yeah, no, like it feels like there are stories that could have been fleshed out with like Susan Hatchie's sort of legacy in terms of her tech company and its relationship to the other kind of like resource management arms of the Marvel Universe. I think that would have been really interesting, which is a very nerdy answer, but like I'm like,
No,
I
I love
actually do
it.
kind of want to know like this corporate intrigue is a fantastic way to like reintroduce this character. So I don't know, like I think it would be fun to do like a Severance style thing
She
with
could be
Susan
the
Hatchie.
background. She could be the background character or the big threat. She could also be like the leader of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, right? Like this character can fit a lot of places and you can make it additive. We could also make a story for her entirely separate from Karma's journey at all. Like I kind of like Susan wanting revenge. That is always a fun place to
I
start.
do want Susan wanting revenge. I can't see her wanting anything else. Her life has been terrible.
Yeah, this girl's been cheated out of revenge every single time, and that sucks. I love her. I'm just like, give her to me.
See, this is
I
you
don't
can't give
know.
Susan Hatchie to either of us because we would just be like, she did nothing wrong and we're going to continue to let her do crimes.
That's a great place to start a story from.
Well, okay, so first of all, you're right. Second of all, give her to me. Oh, man. No. I'd be looking at it
An
like that.
Asian badass boss bitch mutant who has very clear ties to the X-Men. It's delicious. And again, Karma's dad is still out there, and he's waiting to be horribly murdered.
Yeah, he's waiting for a bullet. That man's waiting to catch not just a stray, but like a hailstorm. I want that man. I want that man dead. I also want Karma to meet the general and Tron. I think both of those stories are interesting. And again, Liang and Na are both characters that are fully playable that no one's ever done anything with.
I want to do something with those siblings. Like, I bet that I don't. What powers did they have when Spiral powered them up? You know what I can't stop thinking about though is that like under slightly different circumstances, if we hadn't killed off Susan Hatchie, do you know what kind of fun conversations she would have like with Emma Frost? Like, they both have like the most enormous Real Housewives energy, and they're both so ambitious, and they're both like they have each like specific relationships to revenge and like what that looks like. And I bet that they would be really fun in a room together. Can you imagine? They would have just the most fabulous outfits and they would be so
Brunch
mean.
buddies.
Oh my God, they would be great brunch buddies.
Do you know the character I would actually love even more is Emma Frost's evil sister Adrienne, who is like
Oh
a
my God.
telepath crazy boss bitch lady who's like,
Wait, isn't she also dead?
yes, but she again is a mutant who could have
Dead
come back.
Sisters
She
Club.
has like a story where she manipulates the Generation X kids into going to steal a sword because it's the sword that she had her husband murdered with and she wants to own it herself.
Wow.
But she makes Emma do it.
Oh, I too would want that sword.
My favorite part is that the two of you just got to nerd out together over this. That makes me really happy.
I mean, I think that was my favorite part too, is we were like, we're gonna read these comics and we were gonna live text each other our reactions, which is
Yeah,
super
I mean,
fun.
so much of the fun of these comics is that like I don't know, like we had our little quibbles or whatever, but like the thing about comics that I love so much is that no matter what the experience is, you get together and you have a conversation about it and you work things out and then your relationship with both the narrative and the characters change. Like I walked away from the story feeling like pretty frustrated and then like through the course of my conversations with Alyssa and then this conversation, I'm like, you know what? Let's revisit some things. I need to read this again.
Well, and mostly when we read comics, we're reading from the hero perspective. It's really fun to do it from a character perspective, always, you
For
know?
sure.
Uh,
Yeah,
think
it was fun.
I think emotionally, I'm still very deep in the Psylocke emotional territory, and so I'm kind of like, I know Karma's like, what if you didn't choose violence? But I mean, I'm Team Susan. I'm like, what if you did choose violence? I think that I find Susan really sympathetic because how she grew up and how much agency was taken from her over and over and over again. And again, yes, she's a businesswoman, but her business is so it's so personal, that she has been basically driving herself and everything in her life towards this point of revenge. And I think that there's something deeply tragic about that because it's something that just consumes you.
The thing that I keep thinking about with the relationship between Susan and Karma, like just as characters too, is that they're both presented as being fiercely practical. Like Karma is willing to do things that compromise her sense of heroic ethics in order to find her siblings whom she loves. And Susan is someone who is sort of presented in this also like kind of ostensibly practical way. way. She is a businesswoman. She's made a lot of choices. She's very intentional. But she's someone who's motivated by passion in a way that is sort of the flip side of Karma's motivation to find like the people that she loves. And so it becomes this sort of like, that's where I find the characters to be very interesting in tandem, is that they're both like this sort of strange dichotomy of like practicality and passion. And one of them is very motivated by her love of her siblings, and one of them is motivated purely by revenge. And so it's so interesting. I love that aspect of those two characters.
So Liang and Naga have been powered up twice. Once when in the New Mutants Annual, where they're part of the Brat Pack, and then once in the Beast Limited series. In that one, Liang, I think, can increase his size, and Na can decrease her size. They're like power siblings, but that doesn't necessarily mean those are their powers at all. I think that's just what Spiral did to them, if that makes sense at all. There's one story from a New Mutants Annual where a bunch of kids are like aged up by Mojo. So that final image
Oh,
shows
God.
Liang and Na aged up as part of a team called the Brat Pack. They're the two that are in the middle, and that's when they have the
Oh,
changing powers.
of course.
could
The
you
other
tell?
three images, this is where Spiral and Viper use the Wild Ways to like age them up. Liang seems to have some sort of power where he can like grow cells. You'll see an image of him, like he has a walking pair of legs and like tendrils wrapped around, where Na can like hatch versions of herself out of her back and is all techie. Like they're really weird sets of powers as Spiral is using them in these kind of odd tech suits. Neither one directly reflected on their own possible powers, though, I don't think, because Mojo and Spiral are not reliable sources when it comes to upgrades for people
Yeah.
at all.
I for some reason was under the impression that Spiral was mostly a cosmetic changer, but apparently she can change people's powers too, which is super
I mean,
interesting.
she's done a bunch of shit with like Lady Deathstrike over the years, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah, but I kind of like, I mean, her Lady Deathstrike's powers are physical in a way that is very, well, I suppose these two have physical powers too. So maybe
Sure. I
that
mean, Lady
is.
Deathstrike is just a cyborg. Like, she's been fully
Yeah.
integrated into cyborg form. Visuals on these characters are really odd. So, yeah, worthy of a longer exploration. I don't think I'll be doing an episode on Liang and Na anytime soon, unless someone really like amps these characters up in a certain
I don't
way.
know that there's enough there,
Yeah,
but someday I hope they get more stories.
they're generally just something for Karma to rescue. Oh, so when Liang and Naga's powers in the Mojoverse, when they work together, they regress Magma from adult to child. So they say they're working together in tandem. They say our power is to shape the soft and malleable clay of your flesh and spirit as we deem fit in our master's image. So they are rewriting the genetics of something. And then when Spiral messes with them, they're like birthing body parts out of themselves and like crazy tech upgrades. So interesting. I don't know exactly what their powers are actually.
Yeah.
I think they are both confirmed to be mutants, however.
Well,
Speaking
we weren't we didn't know that we were going to be going on a little digression about the
about
siblings.
the powers of the family remain super relevant. Yeah, so the visuals are
This
interesting.
is so weird.
God, I hate the way they're drawn so much.
It's really, oh, it's yeah,
Yeah.
it's given some yellow peril there, but I like, oh my God, the weird regression, like, I don't know, upgression.
Yeah, the fact that these kids have been upgraded to adult size twice and they kind of go evil both times while in control of insane supervillains, there's an odd parallel there too, because these were very young children when they left Vietnam. There's like a 10-year gap at least between Karma and them, it seems like.
Yeah. I mean, I bet a part of it too is just that, like, Karma is a part of the New Mutants. Like, that's, I think, the X-Men team that she's more closely associated with, at least in my mind. And so there's yet to be, like, an official, like, I can't remember if there is, but like, I don't know that there's been one that's really stuck, like a new generation of younger mutants after the New Mutants. Like, I'm sure that,
I mean,
like, as far as like.
Generation X, Academy X, there's a bunch of kids
So
on
they.
Krakoa, and then more recently, there's
Okay.
kind of outliers that are in the new books.
Yeah, no, like, I could, like, are they too young to be hanging out with, like, Pixie and, like, all of the, and then, like, the newer kids? I'm sure that there are younger ones.
Cyclops and Spider-Man stay 27 forever, but Jubilee used to be 13 and now now she's 30. So
Yeah, okay, All
Cyclops.
right, so
I
only
know
Asians age. All
Cyclopses.
right.
But so if you don't, right?
Blame
Krakoa. There's age-changing characters out there too. You know, nannies reverting Storm to like adolescent version all the time. Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah,
I do. I love the way the age changes.
There's a bunch of stories about Karma's family waiting to be told for sure. This is interesting.
Yeah, no, I really want, like, if we could, like, get their powers established in a way that isn't, like, that's, like, not only plot relevant, I would love for them to be, like, a little, like, can you imagine them as, like, a Power Pack style, like,
You
superhero
know,
team and, like, beleaguered Karma?
another pair that falls into this is Jean Grey has a sister, Sarah, who has those two kids, Joey and Galen. Joey and
Oh,
Galen have
yeah.
also been aged up multiple times and have different versions of their powers when they're aged up. Like, there's a whole generation of characters that have been around for 40 years that no one's ever really done anything with. That's an interesting area to mine.
Oh, I didn't know that there were other Greys still around. Their
Oh,
family
they
is too
got
much.
murdered, but again, there's resurrection protocols, so who knows?
Okay.
I had a delightful time with you both today. I love hanging out with both of you anytime and always. As we're wrapping up, where can people find you online? Anything you want to plug for late September, early October?
Sure. You can find me online in a number of places. Crashwong.net is my website, and you can usually find me somewhere on social media at Crashwong. I can't tell you about anything I'm working on. Legally, I can't tell you about anything I'm working on, but I'm
You're
excited.
not, are you doing anything during the Age of Revelation book event at Marvel?
Can't tell you
Okay.
anything, or Disney will kill
No,
me.
I wonder, because some of those announcements have been made. If they would have been made by the end of September, you're safe. But if not, it's okay. Trung?
You can find me online in most places at Trungles. My website is at trungles.com, and that has all of the relevant links to all of the places. I think I'm mostly on Blue Sky and Instagram these days. So at trungles.com on Blue Sky and at Trungles on Instagram. Apparently, my Tumblr has been popping off recently, and I don't understand why. I never know what's going on with that website. I'll be at New York Comic Con in October, and I think that will be just after this episode comes out. So that'll be fun. And I have a book coming out. I'll be there to promote my new book that comes out on October 7th, which is Angelica and the Bear Prince, which the trade publications have given very kind starred reviews to. So you should check that out.
I'm so excited to
It's
read. I'm a
so
huge
good.
fan of both of you. This has been lovely. And if you'd like to follow Trung's OnlyFans, you can also see his Tumblr popping off there. Lastly, you can follow the show at GreyVulcan_Lane on Instagram most easily. The next episode coming out immediately after this on the Patreon is all about the character Sapna. You probably haven't heard of her. We'll teach you all about her next time. My friend Asher Lane is joining me there. And then over on the main show, Sabretooth is debuting on GreyVulcan Lane in October. So watch for some early origins of Sabretooth stories. Trung, Alyssa, I love you both. Thank you both so much. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you all back here next time on the GreyVulcan Lane Patreon.
And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In the years after World War II, while concentration camps were still being liberated and mass graves uncovered across Europe, a young British writer named David Irving began building a reputation as a daring historian of Nazi Germany. He interviewed former German officers, gained access to private war diaries, and dug through archives few others had seen. His early books sold widely and were treated seriously, even when controversial. Irving presented himself as someone willing to challenge accepted narratives in search of, quote, hidden truth. But as he worked deeper into the historical record, a pattern slowly emerged. When documents pointed clearly to mass murder, he minimized them. When testimonies described gas chambers, he questioned their reliability. When evidence contradicted his growing beliefs, he left it out. Over time, Irving's version of history drifted further from reality. He began claiming that Adolf Hitler had not ordered the extermination of Jews, that the Holocaust had been exaggerated, and eventually that gas chambers were largely a myth. Other historians who reviewed his work found that he had mistranslated German documents, removed key phrases, and selectively quoted sources to support his arguments. Colleagues later described moments when Irving would become angry when confronted with evidence he couldn't dismiss, insisting that mainstream historians were part of a conspiracy to distort the past. What made his claims dangerous wasn't just their extremism, but their presentation, wrapped in footnotes, confident language, and the appearance of serious scholarship. censorship. The reckoning came in 2000 when Irving sued American historian Deborah Lipstadt for libel after she publicly identified him as a Holocaust denier. In a British courtroom where Lipstadt was required to prove her claims, historians walked through Irving's books line by line, showing how he had manipulated evidence again and again. The judge ruled that Irving had deliberately falsified history, describing him as an anti-Semite and an active Holocaust denier who twisted facts to serve ideology. It wasn't a case of mistaken interpretation, but of intentional distortion. Irving didn't disappear after that ruling. His writings continued circulating, and his methods became a model for a broader denial movement that adopted the same tactics: selective evidence, manufactured doubt, and the claim that real truth was being hidden. What started with one historian choosing which facts to ignore spread into organized networks, especially online, where alternative versions of history could travel faster than corrections. Today, Holocaust denial is understood not as confusion, but as a deliberate effort to rewrite reality, one that remains closely tied to extremist and neo-Nazi movements. Like propaganda worlds where fascism never truly loses, denial works by reshaping the past until lies begin to feel like another version of history itself. We're going to talk very briefly about the Marvels Project, which is an 8-issue limited series from the early 2000s. Oh no, whoops, I pulled up my wrong notes. We're going to talk very briefly. Sorry. We're going to talk very briefly about Captain America Reborn. This is the series in the early 2000s when Captain America comes back from the dead because turns out he was just unstuck in time the whole time. The Red Skull is still hilariously trapped in Arnim Zola's body. Crossbones and Sin get a little mask to wear on his face, so it's like a Halloween Red Skull mask while he has a body made wrong. It's kind of hilarious. They go to Latveria. Captain America gets yanked out of the time stream where he's been lost, and he is fighting all these people from all these parts of his history, and the Red Skull rejoins his old allies, and Captain America spirals through time and winds up in another fucking world where the Nazis take over in front of a giant propaganda sign of the Red Skull as Uncle Sam, which is not a cosplay I ever needed to see, and it says Uncle Skull wants you dead on the picture, which is amazing. Cap and the Skull trade blows as the time stream keeps morphing, resulting in a big battle with the Arnim Zola Red Skull amping up to giant sentinel size to battle Captain America and his allies. In the end, Captain America is back. Red Skull is defeated, and the threat of fascism and Nazism still ever remains. Let me welcome my friend Patrick Rial, a fellow handbook writer, to the show for the very first time. Patrick, hello. Are you a Red Skull fan, my friend?
Hello. I'm reluctant. I certainly don't support any of the things he says or does. I find him a very fun villain. I've often had a problem with superheroes as a genre in that a lot of the problems in superhero stories these days are solved with violence. And if you're going to have a villain who's the climax of the story is you bombard him with missiles, the Red Skull is a good option for that.
It's nice to have someone to punch.
Exactly. He deserves it fully.
What are some of your thoughts on Captain America Reborn? I'm assuming this was not your first time reading this.
This was not.
Deep lore nerd that I am also.
Yes. And even though I'm Canadian, Captain America, especially Grenwald's run, got me at a very young age, and I stuck with it for at least 20 years there. So this was within that period. One thing about Captain America Reborn that I noticed was that a lot of the plot was driven by Norman Osborn trying to allow the Red Skull into Captain America's body. So it's literally a story about a corporate, hungry business person trying to let the disembodied spirit of Nazi hatred and fascism into the living embodiment of America. And I just think that's a little, it's still a little relevant.
It's such a consistent pattern in
exactly.
Captain America stories that it's alarming. Now, if you're going to bring a character back from the dead, this is a really fun fucking way to do it. We get Red Skull as like a giant Arnim Zola sentinel. We get lots of time travel, Captain America choosing to be a man out of time this time. Did you enjoy this series reread?
I did, actually. I'm sure I noticed it the first time too, but the unstuck in time thing has to be a reference to Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, which I'm not going to put this on that level. Vonnegut's one of my favorite authors. But
Look, I'm going to pause you very quickly. I've been doing a feature over on the Patreon for those that are listening called Timey Wimey with my friend Kevin Canary, where we're taking a Kang story and a movie one at a time and talking about time travel tropes. So I'm getting an education in this. I just watched Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time, like just last week, and it's fucking rad. It's a
good movie. There you go. Yes, and the books, the movie's pretty faithful to the book, as I remember. What was I saying?
I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Welcome to Tangents on Grey Malkin and Patrick.
No, that's what we're for. But yeah, I was amazed the way the story tries to be this hardcore espionage gritty affair, but still has like Super MODOK and a giant Arnim Zola Red Skull. Like they're not ashamed of being a superhero comic while also taking it very seriously. And perhaps fascism deserves to be taken a little more seriously, but it's also just fun to see them get beat up sometimes. And
Captain America comics, if you remember in the first Captain America film, whenever Cap was on the road, they were making him do these like little song and dance numbers with like the dancing ladies. That's often how Captain America comics feel to me. It's like a big patriotic, like, woohoo, let's go punch some robots with my shield, you know, energy. There's a terrible soundtrack in the background, but I love me some Cap comics. Did you have any thoughts on the opening statements I made about the Holocaust denial movement?
Well, it's very a lot of what we've heard with fake news, isn't it? Like, this has not gone away in the slightest, and if anything, it's only getting worse. And I think with AI coming to erase any semblance of a shared reality in our media, it's not looking good, is it?
These are crazy times.
Yeah, I really just, the worst part for me was when you said, like, after they ruled that he had done it, his works were just still out there, like propagating, which is what the Red Skull is doing. He's just still out there propagating and corrupting anyone he comes in mind with. The reason I like the Red Skull so much, I grew up in what can only be described as a pretty racist suburban area. We, at the time I was growing up, were known for a few race riots at our high school. I saw in the Red Skull, and particularly in Crossbones, something very realistic, which I don't think the Red Skull's often seen as a realistic villain. He's a over the top character. And by the way, I'm very happy I got to hear the voice in live.
Oh, you got you for one line.
Yeah, I know. I wish it was more, but I'm happy I got it at all. But the Red Skull or rather the Crossbones particularly about it, he in the Grenwald run was presented as this tough guy who just wanted to be the baddest tough guy. And these days he's exactly the kind of guy who would be serving on ice. Like he'd be wearing the ridiculous costume, which he's wearing a ridiculous costume, certainly, but he wants to present himself as this big, bad badass. So he sides with a Nazi and he knows it. He's not got any qualms about it. That's what he wants out of his actual life. And to me, I knew people like that. Like it sucks.
Just a reprehensible type of human. I have a lot of thoughts I could say about that, but I'm just gonna nod and agree.
Yes.
Think of the worst person you knew in high school. Mm-hmm. That's all of ice. Like it's gross when you take it that direction. I'm asking all my guests this. These are crazy times. How are you holding up in 2026, my friend?
I think about as well as anyone. As I said, I'm Canadian, so things are slightly different for me than you. We get a lot. We've had it's died down a little bit as Trump doesn't have the best attention span. But we get a lot of threats. It's inspiring to see the amount of people coming out in protests. Like that alone, like I don't even know. Like sorry,
It's okay.
It's there's so many people who are working, even if the media doesn't always reveal it, that are trying their best to fight against it. And it just sucks that the people in power have more power, but we just have the numbers. It's the thing. And as a Canadian, I'm supposed to have this rivalry with America, but I see the same fascists here that I see there. We are in it together. There is nothing, the border is made up and our governments are a little connected even when they're fighting. We just have to keep working. In this story, Captain America, on his little Billy Pilgrim journey, he spends a lot of time looking at his failures. And I do think we have to not focus so much on our failures. We have to fight. We have to just keep going and work together while we do it.
Well, I have to say this every time, but because I do things in advance, but we're recording this in early February. This will not come out until at least a month from now. And who knows what
who knows?
The hell is happening. But everybody, please take care of yourselves. Patrick,
Patrick, for self-indulgence, I'm wondering how you first heard about my show. And as someone who listens to my show, when I talk about my experiences working on the handbooks, which isn't super often, but do I get it right? Does it sound accurate to you as a fellow handbook writer?
I do think you certainly had a lot more handbooks than me. I think I'm only credited on four or five. So you definitely, I defer to you, if anything. How did I first hear about the show? I assume I just recognized your name when I saw it in a feed. I was listening to Cerebro first, and certainly I would have looked for other podcasts to fill the gap in between episodes there, and I would have recognized your name from both the handbooks and from the
Yeah,
appendix. And so yeah, I would have checked it out, and yeah, it appeals to me greatly.
Well, this is our first time meeting face to face, but
Yes.
we've been interacting online for years. How lovely to meet you.
You
I
too.
can't wait to hang out again.
Yes, indeed. We'll find something for sure.
All right, everybody. Hey, take care of yourselves. Stay safe out there. We'll see you back here next week on Gray Malkin Lane.